The talk today is called Just Taking Off Our Shoes. One of my favorite teachings that I heard was someone talking about death and saying, it's like taking off a tight shoe. And sometimes during the day on a meditation retreat, we start to get that feeling with the death of the so-called ego, that it's not so bad after all. Taking off a too tight shoe. When our sensitivity is not kind of jangled, but we recover the tenderness. We start to find out that we have this huge, wide, clear heart. And sometimes I think that we then turn back to the business of separation or ego, because we think that to have a wide heart like that would be impossible in this world. There's a certain truth in that. That wide, clear, clean, tender heart doesn't know how to survive in this world or in any world. Because it's not about surviving. It's about something else we could call living. And so then it's about our idea of what the world is about. Is the world only about surviving, that world out there? Or is it possible, starting from a different place, like the clear, wide heart, that the world is a different place? When we have these undefended moments, and it's not always terrifying, sometimes it's the shoe is off. And we start to see that we're also included in the care. It's not only a care for others that comes through the tender heart. We have these undefended moments and we still question whether it's possible to be in the world undefended. Is it possible that there's protection that's not defense? And so it usually takes us some years before we're willing to make an experiment and sort of take one step from our tender heart to see what happens. Not quite undefended, kind of taking a step and looking all around, coming back. Another way to talk about this question, is it possible to navigate or be navigated disregarding the whole game of emotional charge? If we look at our usual way as human beings now, and maybe not only now, what we're trained in is using emotional charge to confirm our ideas of what is going on. If we have a negative idea, then the emotional charge will confirm that it's negative, etc. To use emotional charge to capture and dominate or get our way or confirm our ideas. It's almost like we got stuck at 3 or 4 years old. And we think, and so we're pretending, that we should be grown up. We think like the body got bigger. We went through puberty. We're allowed to do stuff. Are there any questions so far or anything to say?
How do you think protection without defense
might protection without...
Protection that is not defense.
What about, I heard that, but what about it?
How do you think that might look?
How it might look? Maybe that means it's time to read the poem. I think this is a good, it kind of covers. So it often happens that notes start to come for the next Dharma talk, and then people come to interviews and say, talk about the same thing. And I open a book that someone is lending me and I find a poem about the same thing. This is by Mary Oliver and it's called Just Lying on the Grass at Blackwater, which is the name of a pond near where she lives. This is a woman in America, in the United States, who's still alive. It's kind of long, but let's see how we go. I cut out some. She starts by saying, I think sometimes of the possible glamour of death, that it might be wonderful to be lost and happy inside the green grass, or to be the green grass. And then I cut out the part where she talks about, or to be this flower or that flower or this, or the trees or the river. I lie down in the fields of goldenrod and everlasting, another kind of plant. Who could find me? So she's also talking about death and not just death of the body, but who could find me? So that's the first answer. What could protection without defense look like? Who could find me? I'm just lying down in the fields. And there's gold and there's eternity. The names of the plants, goldenrod and everlasting. Who could find me? My thoughts simplify. I have not done 1,000 things or 100 things, but perhaps a few. As for wondering about answers that are not available except in books, though all my childhood I was sent there to find them, I have learned to leave all that behind. So two more pointers about protection without defense. Our thoughts simplify. That partly means we don't need to be important by having a greater number of things that we've done or are about to do. or have been done to us or whatever. But also, it's not true that we've done nothing. It's just really simply true that we've done a few things. How we define what those things are gives some hints toward what is protection without defense. Partly, it's not up to me to define and decide what were the few things in this life. It also wasn't only in my hands to make those things happen. And I have no reason to defend that this was a thing. Don't you see? I did it. As for wondering about answers that are not available except in books, though all my childhood I was sent there to find them, I have learned to leave all that behind. So this more living learning, it takes courage to learn and to leave that all behind. Sometimes with gratitude for what was in the book that helped us make some steps so that we could learn to leave it all behind. So even with, let's say, this meditation retreat, we've had all of those instructions. And some of them were useful for a while. And some of them were useless. But when it comes into a living learning, it's allowing that living learning to leave behind how it was then. When it was helpful before, when you heard it, what you thought it meant then, and coming into what it means now, if it means something. Coming into what moves you now or moves us now. To leave all that behind is one gesture that really feels the of taking off the shoes. And doesn't believe so much in the worry about what if I need my shoes over there? What if I cross the field barefoot and then I need my shoes and I have to come all the way back over here? I might as well wear the shoes. So out of worry, and then we're so worried that we become lazy. And then there's not as much room for just letting it be lovely, that walk across the field with no shoes on. So the importance of letting it be lovely sometimes. And that's not even one of the few things that we did. That's what leaves space for those few things. And so then we come to the title of the talk. I've learned to leave all that behind, though all my childhood I was sent there to find those answers. I've learned to leave all that behind, as in summer, I take off my shoes and my socks, my jacket, my hat, and go on, happier, through the fields. The little sparrow with the pink beak calls out over and over, so simply, not to me, but to the whole world. So that's, is that the third clue about protection without defense? Or the fourth? When we let that simplifying come, and we feel how, just like sometimes when we take off our shoes, including when it's a death of what I thought about the world or what I thought about me. When we take that off and it's not just scary. And it's okay that it's just a little sparrow and the beak is pink. That could have been another title of the talk, the pink beak, that tenderness. That's open, that can open. That can call out. So sometimes we want to go with that tenderness only inside, and that's not where protection is, if we're only inside. That's a subtle defense. If we would just hide in our meditation. It's unavoidable. The open system that we are, it's unavoidable. Right now we're breathing in. Thank God we can breathe in. And then we're breathing out. What if we couldn't breathe out? So when it's simple and the tenderness can open and can call out and not only just be simple in here, just be tenderness for myself, that's already hard enough, just to be tenderness for myself, but it doesn't work. To try to stay like that. But then if we find out that what calls out through the pink beak, what happens through the tenderness, through that wide, clear freshness that we call heart, it's not for anybody. So it doesn't get involved in the negotiations, the capture and dominate. Of emotional charge that we spoke of before. So protection without defense, it's partly, that's really a clue that this feeling that this little sparrow, this little tiny pink beak, just on a piece of grass, completely unspecial, can sing out to the whole world. All afternoon, I grow wiser listening to him. Soft, small, nameless fellow at the top of some weed. Enjoying his life. If you can sing, do it. If not, even silence can feel to the world like happiness, like praise, from the pool of shade you have found beneath the everlasting. So she and we are talking about, again, timelessness. So she's using this really obvious particular plant that grows wild that happens to be called everlasting. And I don't know what it is. I have no idea what it looks like. But I would imagine that it's called everlasting because it does something for a long time. Either stays green or blooms, or it can grow kind of anywhere or whatever. And that is the funny thing about tenderness, is that it can go on for a long time, whether it's blooming or being green or growing up in some place unexpectedly. So one point is, if we can allow ourselves to enjoy the of taking off our shoes. So that means taking them off enough times that it stops being so scary, that the bareness doesn't only feel frightening, that the depths of what we think of the world and of ourselves don't only feel disconcerting, disorienting, confusing, and scary, but that we start to also tune into the And then we land into timelessness. So, which is this word that's been throwing around this week. But we also, we know very concrete experiences of timelessness, which is really funny to talk about, experiences, moments of timelessness. But in the experiential way, we can really talk about moments of timelessness, moments out of time. There's the kind where we're just stopped. That's the most noticeable, maybe. We're stopped by something so beautiful or awesome or terrible that we're stopped. And suddenly, it's not so important if we get like an A on the paper at school, or if we get to work on time or whatever. There's the other kind of obvious way of letting timelessness take over, and that's when we get so absorbed in something that we love to do that we lose track of time. Which means we lose track of me. We lose track of being separate. We lose track of having to carry something or do something alone. And we lose track of the neediness that I could have to have someone to help me do what I do, my few things. And then there's this really graceful, easygoing, just letting it be lovely sometimes. And that could be anywhere. It's easier when there's something that we like going on, like we're sitting watching sunset over the river, if we like that or whatever. And several people have mentioned this week. And as I was writing it on the paper, they would come to the interviews and say, I was sitting by the river for what seemed like a long time. It was so lovely. And then I thought, maybe I better get back. And it's kind of like, why? Where? Oh yeah, this is what I'm on retreat for. I have permission, I could stay a few more minutes. So not hurrying away from when it's lovely. Lovely is like not something it's not an excitement. It's not a thing. It's not one of our few things. But it is what gives space and the spaciousness for the things that are important that we get around to doing. which might be at the end of our life that one time that we listened for an hour to someone really tenderly. And all of those moments of letting it be lovely allowed something there. That was not, it's like the bird singing to the whole world, and that person just could learn by sitting all afternoon together. We're not doing it to that person for that person. It's wide, and in a certain way, we can call it impersonal. Or maybe the better word is coincidental. So on retreat, sometimes there's so much gratitude for what has been allowed to come along, to come up, to go away, etc. And I think the gratitude is all the greater because there's not quite somewhere where the gratitude can totally land. There can be gratitude to the people that made it happen, who definitely did certain things without which there would be no retreat. But the gratitude is bigger than that. And it's all the greater because it can't land on any one person, including ourselves. There might be a tendency to want to funnel it onto me or you. And that's limiting the gratitude. Maybe afraid of that width of gratitude. So the importance of enjoying our lives as well as doing the few things. I have this word that's invented itself to describe us human beings. I hope it doesn't take me over like the last time. It's not nearly as funny as smorgasbord. But it's spaceberg.
It's what?
Space. Berg. Like iceberg, but spaceberg. It's not Swedish.
The last part is Swedish. It's my last name.
And what does Jens mean?
I'm not sure.
Okay. So we can call it Jensberg instead of Spaceberg. Luckily, I don't need my notes today because I can't see them. It's really lovely because I like to play with this art called Jinshin Jutsu that we've been doing this week in different ways, that hold your finger, any finger thing. And this is the first time in many, many years that I'm traveling without my books, my Jinshin books. I've been practicing since, I think, 94 I began. So I'm coming up to 20-year anniversary. I think I'm a lot slower than Mary Oliver in leaving the books behind. And there actually have been several moments that I really wish I had my books, actually. But then I found another book in the library in Lucknow, and I could just write down this much information that I need to travel with. Which I haven't used yet, even once. Because writing it down, it got in. And I want to talk a little bit about the Jin Shin Jutsu view of not only a human being, but actually any creature. So that when we feel that of taking off Shu, leaving behind books and answers that are only available in books, leaving behind emotional charge, leaving behind survival, making room for living and enjoying our life, making room for the pink geek that calls out to the whole world. We don't want to think of what it could be like to be the mother of the whole world. But when we're even a little bit in touch with our wide, clean, clear heart, we know that we are. And it's not that we have to do all of those things that a mother would do, but the care is all. The care for everything is all in us. And the idea of that scares us. The experience of it is overpowering for our view of ourselves. So maybe it's time for a new view. And that's why this Berg idea, Jens Berg or Space Berg, kind of silly idea. So we know that the iceberg only shows a little bit of itself above the water. They say 10%. And some of the icebergs are enormous. So it's impossible to even really calculate how big they are under the water, to think of nine times that tower. Ninety percent is a lot. And I would say that at least 90% of us is invisible to us. We sometimes might have glimpses, sometimes that might kind of brush against, like graze the ground or whatever, underwater. But we've been taught and we tend to think of ourselves as just that, the thing that fits in the shoe only. And so without a shoe, what will happen to me? So if we could start to feel that it's just the foot in the shoe and only sometimes, there's already a huge, massive, without which there isn't the top of it. So in Jin Shin, where we start from, which they call, let's say, number nine, or they call it the ninth depth of us, is called nothing. That is our great protection. That who could find me? That unknowability There's some very weird statement from science apparently coming out now, the last few years, that we do know, we start to know how much we don't know. Supposedly, we know that what we don't know is like 90% of what is. Something like that, or more. Maybe 99, I don't know. So I think that the iceberg proportion may be quite accurate. Or on the generous side. If we just think for a moment of, just to get a flavor of how good to have a huge portion of us that's unknowable. It can't be pinned down. Something in us without which we are not, that no one will ever know. No one will ever name. No one can grab. No one can manipulate. And one really, really cool thing about this depth, that it's called nothing. It doesn't mean that it's nothing in the sense of unimportant. It's the most important because that comes first. Things start there. In that, anything is possible. Nothing is missing. The next depth, they call depth, the next depth is called the eighth depth. And it's the point. We can call it the still point. We could call it the source, even though it's not quite the source because it's coming out of somewhere. Without the ninth depth, there's not an eighth. A beautiful thing about the depths, and I love this trick in the numbering that's been given to the to just describe this view of what a human being is or what a creature is that even though in a way the subtle comes first and comes into form, they call it densing down, there's definitely not a nine. We never get to nine if we don't start at one. And so it all goes together very well. This point, or still point, we could call it, again, anything is possible. But we're kind of also on the map. It's not just nothing. And so there's a, it's like a leverage point as well. There could be some act. There could be that those few things. It could make a difference. Can bring timelessness into time. A whiff of that into a moment that's out of time. Being stopped or stopping, losing track of me and my separation from this world and enjoying. And thirdly, letting it be lovely. This might be enough. This might have such great leverage that it makes a difference. That it turns the world inside out, so that the world is experienced not as about surviving, but enjoyable living. So here there can be an actual experience that might be like this. So even the physical body could be experienced as a kind of three-dimensional image, as if in water. And the tiniest being moved ripples throughout the whole thing. This is a place where it seems to me that only tenderness is allowed, because it's so subtle, and because this, let's call it liquid body, wouldn't show itself to unkindness and would love to be playful, would love to come with a playful attitude towards love, towards the still point, so there's not any pushiness or plan. The seventh depth they talk about as light raining down, light coming down. It's light that has a specific intelligence of being able to, let's call it alchemically, remind us of harmony. So this might be where we talk about protector energy or energies. What's cool is that this is all the time available, and we all the time have the possibility of letting it help our individuality remember harmony, or creatively move into harmony. In a little bit more practical imagery, they talk about the human being as standing like this, with the, if I would be standing, but with the arms up, and the energy coming in this side and down the opposite in a big kind of cross. And it's our receptivity that's important, to let that in and to let that communicate to our other layers. Light raining down helps create this, but is not yet individual. The sixth depth is the first individual depth in Jinshin. This is just a description. Sometimes it helps to have another view. Sometimes it helps to have another view in order to let go of the views in general, to kind of be swept of views. So please don't take it too seriously. We can leave the book behind, take off our shoes, and let it be lovely walking in the fields, lying in the fields. The sixth depth is that silkiness that we contact sometimes in meditation. The already harmony, the already okay, the deep okayness, where there's nourishment and spaciousness. The spaciousness is a support, that sixth depth. The fifth is fire, and it, strangely enough, goes with our bones. So it's like the core, physically. They start to talk about, it's as if energy is densing down. Slowly, slowly starting to actually make a shape that we could sense and feel and touch. Some people would talk about sixth depth as soul or spirit, and others would talk about fifth depth as soul. I think I prefer the second, where the sixth depth is even beyond soul, something even more spiritual, less individual than whatever soul might mean. And fifth depth, the kind of brightness and spark of life at our core. Which is joy. In harmony is joy. The joy of not taking it personally, and yet taking it in, what's helpful, what helps this living kind of learning come through. It's also that generous singing for the whole world. When it gets into disharmony is when we're really trying to help you, or really trying to look happy. The suggestion here is that if we simply notice we're trying too hard or pretending, that very same energy could just relax into the tension into a more subtle joy that is in our core. So relaxing, waiting, receptive, at giving at least 20 minutes of, let's say, letting it be lovely. Of not the neediness that it be lovely to confirm that I'm okay, right? But already okay, already enough. That already the intelligence would be available and come through when there's openness. We can sing if we sing and not sing if we don't sing, enjoying our lives. The fourth, what they call fourth depth, is also very deep, still possibly under the water. These fifth and fourth depths might be like what we could see of the iceberg from above the water. It's definitely individual, individualized. But very deep. I would say fourth depth covers still an unknown in us. What's unknown but knowable, and also what's unknown and unknowable, unthinkable. But has a kind of potential willingness for transformation, potential willingness for alchemy, where some help could come in and completely change the way of being, or in more gross examples, we could allow a complete change in the state of mind without thinking, I need to defend, I should be angry because they did hurt me, or I really should be sad because I lost such and such. It's the fluidity that we can feel in a gross sense, and also the very subtle fluidity. Which means adaptable, we can get around things that otherwise would seem to be in our way. Nothing can stop that quality in us, in a human being. But more deeply, more importantly, a basic potential to be liberated. If we think of chemistry, there are the molecules that they have a certain shape, and if it's not taken up by the other molecule, it's open, it's available to receive. And if another molecule comes and through attraction connects, it's a different element. It's not just a different name, it's a completely different substance. So that willingness to leave behind not just books of other people's words, but our own lives, what we've invested in, what we really thought was true and important. The third depth sounds more subtle than fire and water because it's energy, chi. But it starts to be near the surface of the water, I would say, for the iceberg or the Jensberg, spaceberg. I call it spaceberg because as if we're made mostly of space, and then we just have this little tiny body on top, floating, only staying above the surface because of all of that mass that also floats. The third depth is about the willingness to let life really come in to this life and to do the few things that we do, not to hold back, not to think or believe that we're not good enough or that we should do something more important. Accepting that there is that innocence or purity in a human being. It's not special. And that from there come a few things in a life. Anger comes when we don't allow that. When we are not allowed We get angry. We get frustrated. And when we come into a habit of not allowing life in, there's anger. And again, it's in a way so simple. When we notice anger, we could just allow relaxation, anger not being wrong, but just a sign that life wants to come in and isn't coming, is being held out or back as blame, judgment, etc. We might have to kind of rest down through a wall of fire to come to the simple freshness of letting life come in. For fun, if you want to play with this in a practical way, in Jinshin they say that the life force, this chi, comes in through the sacrum, the lower back. So putting the hands there or just feeling openness and letting that come in and rise up and circulate through. It's about taking the step in this life, which seems to be stepping into the unknown. But once we've taken the step, it's a gift to all. It's now known. It wasn't known before, now it's known. When people make breakthroughs for the collective in art or music or science or whatever, now we've gotten used to modern painting, or now we've gotten used to quantum physics. But not so long ago, that was really, really crazy. Like, someone could be sent to jail for that. So that courage, but that simple courage, following through, nothing special. Second depth, as we dense down, is the breath. So I love how the breath comes in before there's any body to breathe it into. There's no earth yet. There's first breath. Sometimes it helps to feel our breath body. Sometimes it really helps to let ourselves as human beings really live on that edge where the past is gone, something new is coming, and it's unknown what it is, but to actually live there, where we keep letting the old die and be nourishing. We let the old die, we let the past die and be nourishing instead of burdensome. In the very same place, when we're not holding on to what we don't need, when we trust that what we need, also in terms of nourishment, does come, can only come when we've let go. Just like we breathe out what's not needed, so then it's possible to breathe in, and somehow the body does. We don't have to do it. So that's a metaphor and the actual part of this second depth. That generosity. We're living in like the sprouting of newness. And I don't know about you, but one of my favorite things in the world is to plant seeds, literally plant seeds, and watch them come up. There's some other kind of nourishment in being in that newness. So that's wisdom. That's taking off our shoes. That's death, being the grass. First step, finally, there's enough substance to call it a body. There's earth. And there's this big brain and what to do with it. When we notice that this big brain is worrying and worrisome, all that we have to do is not take it too seriously, not take it personally, but still take it as a communication that there is disharmony in Jinshin terms, in the earth element, in the first depth. There's obsessive thinking and worry. Relaxation, noticing that, and relaxation, giving it at least 20 minutes. Allowing us to tune into our sixth sense. So it's not just that we have reason to worry. The information that's coming in through our senses could easily lead us to worry. But if we allow the information to come into the five senses and our sixth sense, then there's no worry. The sixth sense gives us all the communication and information that we need to navigate. So that's a last important kind of protection that's not defense. There might be situations that bring up fear, and if we only go on the five senses and we know how limited they are, any second someone could pop up out of nowhere. We should worry. We should defend. We should be afraid. But if we remember to let the sixth sense also into the picture as a kind of base, not as an extra add-on, as a place where we stand, a place that can move our feet, then even having a body, like showing up, here we are. Scary things happen. If we let there be room for the sixth sense, we have a chance to hear before our ears can hear important messages, like go away from here, or stay and listen to this person or whatever. So all of that is us, not just earth and breath, not just first and second depths, according to Jinshin Jutsu. Now, let's see what you find. See if I can read. No, no way. Taking off our shoes, letting go of defense, survival, letting go of worry, holding on to the past, anger, fear, trying too hard, pretending, being smaller than what we are, being more known and knowable than what we are, letting go of answers that can only be found in books, leaving room for living, taking off our shoes, socks, jacket, hat, walking into the fields. Timelessly, we're on sacred ground, no matter what we find in the field. Thank you for listening. And for your presence here over these 7 days. For intermingling of depths. And bare feet.